This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Warning. The following podcast, which contains strong language and mature content, is unsuitable for children or for the faint of heart. The subject matter discussed will be frightening and graphic in nature. Listener discretion is advised.
Three spooked girls. When you wanna hear about the paranormal, you get the spooked girls. True crime that makes you hypothermal with the three spooked girls. Stabby snippets will give you dreams. Tara and Jessica will make you ask great, along with the spooked girls. Bring on the slaughter, we on that haunted ground.
Spooked girls.
The three spooked girls.
Hey there, Spooksters, and welcome back to another episode here on Three Spooked Girls. My name is Jessica, and as always, I am joined by my favorite ghoul friend, Tara.
Hey, Spooksters.
I'm so proud of myself that I pointed the right way.
For what?
If you're listening, you're probably like, what do you mean pointed? But if you're watching it on YouTube, you would see that I pointed in the right direction instead of off to the wrong direction. So good job, Jessica.
Yay. Oh my God. I noticed something earlier when we were talking before we hit record, but I didn't say it.
Mm-hmm.
So like we've unintentionally coordinated because you got like cream with a little black heart on your shirt.
Oh, I do. A little black heart.
And I'm wearing a black tank top with a cream cardigan. So like, so cute. We're so cute today.
We did this, but not this. I had no clue. In fact, I was wearing a flannel shirt earlier because it's pouring rain in California. On Wednesday, it was 80 degrees. On Thursday, it was 85 degrees.
Sounds right.
Yesterday, it was in the 70s, and today it is raining. I was like, cool. Yay, rain.
Yay.
We should just dive straight in. So this is our fifth and final installment of Quiet on the Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV. And this episode is called Breaking the Silence. It is going to be more of a 60 minutes type format. You're not going to see the same like docu-style that was before. And that actually makes sense because in this episode, they talk about like how long ago they had like recorded.
Yeah.
And it's like had been a year. So it had been so long. So the fact that it was like, what, from February to now, and it's only April, like it came out April 7th. So such a short span of time. So it's a little less production quality to say it.
Yeah, it was just a check-in with them after it got released and people were finding out things and all that. But I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm. Our host is going to be Soledad O'Brien. She interviews Drake Bell first. I do, one, I keep forgetting that Drake Bell lives in Mexico City. So like when they posted that up, I was like, what? I was like, oh, I forgot he lives there.
You're like, what is he doing there?
Right? He lives there. Which actually makes sense because you're just out of like kind of the American limelight. So like people aren't following you around. Her very first question to him, at least the one that is aired first, is really just out there just punching out. It is, why tell your story now after like two decades? And he answers it, I believe, it's so wonderfully. It's that like, one, he wasn't ready before, but two, to the creators of the documentary, one of them, her name is Emma, she's one of the co-directors, she made him feel really comfortable in sharing his story this time, which I think is important because sometimes we push people to talk before they're ready. And I'm so glad, I don't want to say I'm so glad he was ready because I never wanted him to feel this way anyway, but I'm so glad that when he was ready, that it was a group of people who didn't exploit him because it could have been super exploitive.
Yeah, exactly. That obviously is the biggest thing. And that's what they all say throughout this is that the two creators of this made it a safe, genuine space and showed them. And obviously we saw it, wanted to put the actual truth out, not just whatever narrative that they had come up with.
Right. And that's, I think, from a documentary standpoint, that's kind of the best. You can really change the tone of a documentary if you have a biased opinion on something. They talked about the courtroom in this episode and the support, and they brought up the Will Fadell stuff. I actually didn't know that Drake was the voice of one of the animated Spider-Men. I had to look it up.
Oh, I didn't either.
Because when he's like, I worked with Will on Spider-Man, I was like,
what?
I was like, Drake Bell was in Spider-Man? I was like, was it like when Tobey Maguire was younger? I'm like, what was Will Fadell in there? And then I realized that it was, I Googled it and on his IMDb, he's the voice of a Spider-Man, of Peter Parker in one of the animated series, and Will works on there. And he talks about the fact that nobody has written him a letter, or anyone who wrote the letter, none of them have personally reached out. A lot of them have done the same thing that Will and Ryder did, which was like come out on a public platform and be like, if I had known, I wouldn't have done that. They do put a little clip of his, which is he's talking about how like he realized when he was in court, that was the wrong thing to do. Maybe Will should have made a statement 21 years ago. At first I was like, oh, but Will was a kid. And then I looked at how old he is. He was 26. So he was a grown man. So he did know the difference between right and wrong and how to treat children. And I could understand if Will himself was like maybe just like 19 and still stuck in that like child actor mentality, like hadn't quite broken that cycle. But he was 26 at this point. And he was definitely older, should have known that it was wrong to do. And then there were people who were much, much older than him. So I just wanted to like clarify that. Like,
yeah.
So Drake talks about it and he's like, well, he's not reached out to me personally. He never talked about it when we were working. But then Drake gives him an immediate out and saying like, well, this is a difficult thing to bring up. And I thought about it and was like, if I don't have a relationship with someone, but I know that like they were abused, I might not go up to them and talk to them about it. And granted, it's one step further than that because Will played a part in his abuser being punished less. But it could also be like the fact that like, what do you say other than I'm sorry? You know, not everyone is that big of a person who can step into that space and be like, man, I'm really sorry for this part I played.
Yeah. And I have to say, like, it's very evident in just his little interview that we get how much work he's put into himself and mm-hmm. how much he's grown, like, as a human and the empathy he has for these defenders and for everybody is just incredible. It's really easy to kind of go on that side of anger and grudges and things like that. So,
oh, for sure.
That really stuck out to me a lot for Drake.
We'll get into some other like scandals around Drake and some other people in a minute. But one of the big things they talked about scandal wise is like how this wasn't such a big of a deal. It was like a one news story and then done. And here's the thing you have to realize that Nickelodeon suppressed that shit.
Oh, 1,000%.
1,000%. They paid off other networks. They did shit like that. And I have zero proof. I want to point that out. I have goose egg proof. But just like how else? Jason Handy had just been arrested for pedophilia. And now another member of staff is being arrested. And then we never even heard of the third one. Right.
Like right.
That never came out.
Mm-mm.
For me, it's because Nickelodeon was like, if we talk about this, people are not going to let their kids watch our shows. Like, I'm not a parent, but like, maybe you can answer this. It's like, mm-hmm. I just kind of feel like if I had kids and I knew they were exploiting kids on a TV show, I'd be like, you can't watch that show.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of like how I feel. And I think Nickelodeon was like, we're going to lose millions of dollars if we don't have control of it. And they just kind of, I think what they were doing is they were playing up that Brian was not catfish, but like that basically he was jailbaited. And because Drake was, and this is not Drake's fault, Absolutely not.
Mm-mm.
Because he's only listed as a John Doe, which is what they do to protect victims, it gave Brian and Nickelodeon the freedom to create their own narrative.
Oh, for sure.
Which is how we ended up with 43 letters to begin with, because I'm pretty sure if the real truth had come out, no letters would have been submitted.
Right.
I mean, maybe one or two, and that'd be terrible, but like, I don't think we would have had as many.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Nickelodeon was like, the more we keep out of this, the more we don't engage with it, the less this will happen. Like, less this will come back on us. And that's how Brian Peck got such a light sentence. Like, the reality. Then they bring up the whole Dan and Drake thing about how Dan was so supportive of Drake. And Drake kind of talks, like, you can hear him talk about Dan. And he's just like, look, he was the only one from Nickelodeon who seemed to be making any kind of an effort. Which tells me that it wasn't much of an effort, but was some sort of an effort.
Right. It was at least that phone call.
It was like, hey, you cool? Okay, we cool. We done. But that goes back to my thought as Predator. Recognized predators, and Dan was stepping in because he didn't want people to talk about him, which is another reason why I think that Dan probably influenced people to squash the Brian Peck story, because of the fact that if there was an investigation, what should have happened after this case is there should have been the judge should have ordered an investigation into the Nickelodeon sets. So how did this happen?
Yeah.
And one thing I do appreciate about Drake is they were like, well, you saw the documentary and you heard people, what they said. And it's like, he validates everyone's feelings. He's like, look, I can completely see how that was someone's truth. It's not my truth because it's not the relationship I had with Dan. And I think that's the other thing, is that the truth about a person is so different person to person. And I think Dan just kind of showing up and being like, you good? Okay, like, check in if you're not good. Drake's mind is like, okay, he would have put a stop to this if we saw it. But the thing is that there's no way that Dan didn't see it. There's a reason why Dan called Drake immediately and was like, is this you? And he didn't do that to anyone else because he knew. And yeah, he might have been told by like a network executive, but he knew. He knew because he saw it. Drake addresses the Amanda Bynes by not really addressing Amanda Bynes.
Which I felt was appropriate.
Which I did, because she was like, she was mentioned in this. And because Amanda didn't choose to participate, I really felt like Drake was stepping in and being like, I'm not going to speak to Amanda because she's not here. She's not having these conversations.
Yeah. And that's like across the board. Like, people shouldn't be speculating and theorizing the trauma she's been through in her life. If she wants to talk about it one day, she will. I mean, we saw Twitter years ago, but it's like, if she gets to a place again where she wants to like talk about it, she'll have every offer for a platform for that.
Oh, sure. And I really hope when the time comes, it is not someone exploitive. Like, do not hurt this woman anymore. Which, by the way, I saw a recent photo of Amanda and she's looking fantastic. And she just had a birthday. So happy late birthday to Amanda Bynes.
Yeah. And she just had her first client at school.
That's super exciting.
She did a black mani. And I'm like, I love getting black nails. Pick me. Because I was thinking about our conversation.
Amanda Bynes girl. Like, I know you'll never hear this, but like, literally, nails by Amanda Bynes, you could charge people $5,000 and people will pay it because it's Amanda Bynes doing your nails. Like, that's kind of like a lot of people's like, I want to be friends with the celebrity I saw on TV. And this is like, you basically can sit around and like gab for 2 hours having like mani-pedi time.
Yeah, for sure.
I want it. I will save my monies.
Our Patreon link.
We would like support us so that we can get our nails done by Amanda Bynes one day. We will pay her $5,000. Jessica has made the praise. Because she deserves it. The other thing he talks about in this, Drake's on there for a little bit, but he talks about going to rehab, how that totally, I think rehab saved him.
Yeah.
When you go to therapy, because I know I have therapy, and like therapy is like an hour, it's like 50 minutes once a week where you sit and you talk to someone. And a lot of times it's about what's going on in your world right then and how you're coping with it. You do sometimes get into like the deep, dark stuff and like really work on it. And that takes time. That takes years of therapy. And he talks about how the therapy at rehab was so different for him because it wasn't just the 45 minutes check-in. It was from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. every day. And he's like in a chair doing some sort of therapy. And this is where he got the help he needed. And, you know, Drake went down some addiction roads. And that's understandable for someone who hasn't dealt with such a large trauma. They do turn to addictive substances to kill the pain. And that's what he did. And he got himself into some trouble. We know this. He has DUIs, you know, and things like that. But the therapy really helped. And then he talked about his mom and dad. I know I came hard for his mom. And I'll be honest, is still coming hard for his mom. I understand. Because as a child of someone who, when I was Drake's age, which I am Drake's age.
His age when he went through what his stuff, yeah.
Yeah. That's what when I popped in my head, I'm like, okay, no, literally it was like same time. You know, I was being groomed by an older man and being, you know, told that he loved me and that I had to wait for when I was 18, but still super inappropriate things happening. And my parents like saw it, but I would be like, no, you're reading into like a friendship. That's all that is. And because they trusted me to say like something's not right, they were like, okay, I guess she's telling the truth. I was straight lying to them because I knew what I was doing was they weren't going to be okay with.
Right. It just comes down to the fact that Drake's dad was like, do not let our son be with him alone. That's what it comes down to.
Right.
And that's the thing. It's like, of course, hindsight's like, I was thinking about that too when he was talking about it. Hindsight's 20/20. We know that. He is obviously a very great manipulator. But at the same time, I'm sorry if the other parent of my child was like, hey, I've been seeing these signs, like, please keep our kid, like, keep an eye on our kid. Don't let them be alone with that. Like, there's no way in fuck. There's no way in fuck. And it's just, it's tough because it's like, again, is it because of the things we've been through or like, would everybody feel that way? Like, I don't, you know, it's hard to know, but I'm glad they have a good relationship now and everything. But like, that's still a point of being complicit to it, in my opinion.
No, I get that. I definitely do. I think a lot of people who haven't experienced what you and I've experienced in life, they don't know what to look for. And we have this stereotype of what a predator is. You know, it's the guy in the white van being like, come on, little girl, come look at my puppies. And we're like, that's a creeper. But the truth is that like true predators have people in their life who would be completely blown away. They are sociopaths. They are so narcissistic. They can present to themselves. Now, they slip, and that's what Joe was seeing, like Drake's dad. Joe Bell was seeing these like slips and these cracks and these things of like, well, that makes me feel uncomfortable. And, you know, and I get it. It was like the late 90s or early 2000s. Homophobia was huge.
Right.
And so, you know, Joe seems like such an empathetic person, which is probably why Drake is empathetic, is because he's seen it modeled.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that his mom was like, I was protecting my son from his dad. So whatever his dad was saying was to drive a wedge between me and Brian. But I will say, I'm not condoning her actions. When the abuse started happening, Drake changed. We know that Drake changed. Drake said, I changed. That would have been my cue to be like, okay, so Joe said not to let him be with Brian. Drake is spending a lot of time with Brian and seems really miserable. I need to check in. Unfortunately, everyone is human. And like, she could have been going through shit that we don't know because she didn't tell her kids about it.
Exactly. It's one of those things where it's like, you have to have empathy because like, think about it. She found everything out. I cannot imagine how she felt being like, holy fuck, thinking maybe this is my fault. I can't believe I let my child be around this person. I should have listened. Like with someone like her, people can be upset. And obviously we both like are, but it's like, you have to have empathy because these kind of situations, like you said, they're not black and white. They're not. These people that do these fucking horrible things are hyper aware that perception is fucking everything.
Reality is a delusion in the senses. Like the reality is that they're this terrible, terrible person. They have to put a front. Think about like John Wayne Gacy. Think about like Ted Bundy. Think about like all of these like super crazy serial killers who had a persona that people were like, what? Like, look at Dennis Rader. Like people were like, huh? Dennis Rader has never yelled in his life. How could he be such a vicious killer? Because the side that they do to present. And I mean, I do not think that Drake was his first. And I do not think he was his last victim either. I think that maybe he's targeted probably older teenagers, like started grooming at 17 and then waiting till they were 18 to start the abuse, you know, but maybe also convincing them that they want it. I mean, that's the other thing is that like my childhood abuser convinced me that it was love, that this is what you do. It's okay. So there's probably victims out there who don't feel like, I know people who have been abused who are like, I don't feel like a victim. And they're like, because I was participating in it. And it's like, but you were still a victim, but you just don't know you're a victim because they manipulated you so well. But moving on from that heavy, heavy subject. So they talked about Josh Peck and the fact that like right after this came out, a lot of people who knew Drake, a lot of co-stars came out online and were like, you know, I'm really sorry for what you went through. I wish I had known, blah, blah, blah. And then Josh Peck didn't. And so people on the internet were real fucking mean to Josh Peck and were like, you're a terrible person. How could you not? Blah, blah, blah. You're being complicit. And really, Josh, what Josh did is he met Drake in a personal space and messaged him and talked to him personally. And I'm sure that meant more.
Well, yeah, for sure.
Because I'm sure there were people who posted online and then never reached out to Drake in any other capacity.
I mean, from the sounds of it,
that's what happened.
That is what happened. Like, Josh is the only one who contacted him personally. And it's like, that's so much more genuine. And I think the thing people forget too is like, yes, these are celebrities. And yes, they're sharing their story with the world. But at the end of the day, that closure or that healing they have to do, they have every single fucking right to do it in private. And they don't owe us anything.
And then one of the things that this made me think of is like the guilt of being around someone's life when they're being abused and not seeing it.
But shit, he was a kid himself.
It doesn't like change that. Yeah.
I know. No. I'm sure there's guilt there. Like, I know, like, personally, if I was Josh, like, I would feel so much guilt. But it's like, damn, it's just, it sucks. It sucks so bad. And I just really hope that, like, everyone either involved or, like, orbiting around this, they can find a way to like heal in their own way with their own shit. You know what I mean?
I'm going to adjust your statement just a smidge in saying that I hope that people can give themselves grace.
Yeah.
For people who just weren't being complicit in it, for people who missed it. I was going to say something similar, but that was like my one little tweak was that if you were complicit in letting this man like hurt Drake.
Oh, you can go burn in hell if you fucking knew and you let everything happen. I'm talking about Josh. I'm talking about these other child actors like Shane, you know, people that didn't experience things firsthand. They, in my opinion, are responding in the like only way that's like actually showing to be a good human is being like, look, this didn't like same thing Josh did with the other people or Drake did with the other people. Like, this wasn't my experience, but just because it didn't happen to me doesn't mean it didn't happen to them. And I hear you and I see you and I'm here for you. That is a positive, I think. And it's brought up more later. Like, all of these kids like just have this bond of this really fucking fucked up, weird experience.
Trauma bonded.
Yeah.
Drake talks about how he's kind of like continues to deal with things, and that's through his music. He talks about writing music as like his journal or his diary. Since then, since shooting the documentary, he has written a new song. It's called I Kind of Relate. I watched it. I stopped the documentary in my second watch through for my notes, and I watched the video, the music video. It's really cute. It's not really normal, like what I picture his music as, but it's actually really cute. And it is very storytelling. Like, it's a very, the video is done in a very storytelling way. You know, it kind of just kind of walks him from the abuse to like where he is now. And I just want Drake to have so much peace and understand that like there are people out here who will help him. Because when you don't tell about your abuse, you're alone in it. And now Drake has literally millions of people who are on his side, who I'm sure there are so many facilities, so many places that if he was like, I really need to deal with this trauma, like really deep, they're going to be a resource for him. And then we switch. We're going to go over to Giovanni Samuels and Brian. Apparently his name is like Hearn.
Hearn.
Mm-hmm. Hearn, yeah. And they are back there together, which I thought was nice that they put them together. They talk about a lot about what Dan did and the fact that they're addressing their trauma. Like, one of the things that was interesting is they said they had to take a step back from social media, which when they first said it, I was like, oh my God, who trash humans out there right now?
No, I mean, it would be overwhelming because it was everywhere. So like, not surprised.
But we're conditioned for like the negative response. Mm. So I was like, oh no, someone was terrible. And then they were like, it's been overwhelmingly like positive, like, and whatnot. And I do get that concept. And I do understand like what she was saying when she's addressing the fact that people have been like, oh my God, this has now traumatized me because I loved your show and I didn't realize that you were being traumatized and my heart hurts. And I was like, oh my God, now they have to.
Well, and it's just like, oh my gosh, you just want to hug them because both of them were just like, we, you know, oh my God, we're so sorry. Like, they're not apologizing, but like being
right.
Empathetic and stuff. Well, they were being like, I'm so sorry. Like, you know, that this is like what happened. And I'm just like, man, these people, like all of these people's therapists need like a fucking raise because like these are some strong ass individuals for sure.
They talk about Dan's reaction to this. Now, if you don't know, Dan went on, it was a former member of like a Disney show. I think he has like a web podcast, and they, you know, they're interviewing, and I decided, I was like, okay, because they were showing clips. I was like, I'm going to watch the whole interview because it's only 20 minutes long. I made it 4 minutes, and I was like, I literally was like getting anxious because of the amount of like stress I was feeling from watching this asshole.
Yeah. Fuck him. What stood out to me was Brian said, what's an apology without accountability? Because he'll never take accountability for it. He'll never take accountability for anything.
The 4 minutes I saw of his video, he would be like, I'm so embarrassed for my actions. Being embarrassed is fine. That doesn't mean you're sorry. I mean, he did say he was sorry. Brian does point out that Dan used to be an actor. And I agree with this sentiment.
Oh, I do too. Mm-hmm.
Dan was an actor and this was all a show because it was very like everything felt so scripted in his responses and everything felt like it was the same answer over and over again. And it was, I'm so embarrassed. I wish I hadn't, blah, blah, blah. I mean, on the clip they show on the show, they talk about like the dares, right? And he's like, if any kid had said, I don't want to do this dare, I'm uncomfortable. He's like, period, the end, would have stopped. I was like, bullshit. You know, kids were like, one, kids didn't know what the dare was. And it was, I believe it was a live show.
Yeah, it was at least live recorded because they had an audience. And like, that's the thing. It's like, bullshit, Dan. Bull fucking shit, Dan. Because you literally had Brian laying there with the dogs and the peanut butter being like, I don't like this. I don't like this. When one of your stars are saying this, like, or one of your, you know, one of the kids is saying this, like, that's when you need to like wrangle up the dogs, get him out of there. Like, none of that. He's right. Just, it's so funny. It's not funny, but it's so comical that like he thought this was going to help him save face for this because we talked about in one of the episodes, he's been trying to get back into the entertainment industry since like 2021.
Right.
And nobody wants you, Dan. Fuck off.
That's true. Nobody wants you. They address the whole like adult jokes. And I want to break this down into like three little concepts. But the first concept I want to talk about is the fact that both Giovanni and Brian were like, we weren't comfortable with them. We didn't think they were funny because that was Dan's thing. He said the first part of his apology on that was these were made for kids because kids thought they were funny. And they were like, we didn't think it was funny. And then the other, like, kind of this next step to that is they say, like, we didn't think it was funny, but like, it's our job to make it funny. And then when we look off to the left and we see the production crew and we see like Dan and them, and Giovanni says it the best. She's like, when the creator, the head writer, is sitting there laughing the loudest, you're like, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And so then my kind of third thought on that is the end of his apology is now that these kids have grown up, they're looking back and they're thinking like, and I'm paraphrasing this, that they're like, oh, this is inappropriate. I'm sorry. Were you a child, Dan Schneider, when this was happening? Were you not a fucking adult right? Looking at this through a lens of an adult?
Literally. Like, what makes it okay then? But does it now?
Right. One, Nickelodeon normally had such wholesome content. I remember watching Hey Dude. It was really like just kind of funny. You know, it was kind of wholesome. There was like Pete and Pete was really fucking weird, but like.
Pre-Dan Schneider, Nickelodeon was good. Like Clarissa Explains It All. Like, you know, all of that shit.
It was wholesome AF. So parents, I don't think my parents ever worried what I was watching on Nickelodeon. They weren't like, you can't watch that. I mean, I think my parents didn't really want me to watch Are You Afraid of the Dark because mm-hmm. I think they just knew I would not sleep.
Because it was like scary. That was the concern. It was going to be too scary. Yeah. Like, that's it.
Right. Which now watching as an adult, I'm like, these were not scary. These were funny. But it's just like Dan and his buddies were watching this. And I really do think, and I know this sounds so fucked up, but I do think that Dan was basically curating his own little porn stash of these things of like Jamie Lynn Spears getting shot in the face with the goo and all of the face shots and all of the. And Dan obviously has a feet fetish because it's in every single thing. You know, it's funny. Like, you know, what's funny with feet is like when you're on a set or like you're on a show and like they stub their toe and they're like overly like. They're holding their foot and like jumping around. That's funny. That's a funny foot joke. Not a funny foot joke is an adult man is like rubbing the bottom of their feet or they're putting like Ariana Grande putting her toes in her mouth. Like this is all super sexual shit.
Poor Ariana.
And I think I don't have a foot fetish. I don't even like feet. So maybe this is why I don't like feet. It was just so cringed by Nickelodeon in the 90s. I was like, stop. No. But like people who I don't know what people in foot fetishes do, but I know that a lot of people like they do the toes in the mouth. I'm not judging. I want anyone to know who has a foot fetish. I'm not judging you. I just don't like feet. So like it literally gives me anxiety to think of a foot near my mouth.
Well, and it's like it's not kink shaming. No. It's the fact that he's using a child as the subject of it.
Right, which makes it child porn.
Exactly.
And this is what I'm thinking. Dan Schneider is a predator, but he has found a loophole around his depravity, which is that I don't actually have to touch a child. I can just create content with children in it. I don't have to escalate. Like, I'm sure Brian started out by just like hugging boys and shit like that. And then it grew to where it went. I think that the adults in the room were laughing because they knew it was a dirty joke. And, you know, we heard from the writers that Dan knew they were dirty jokes. So I don't know how Dan thinks he can get around that shit. Did he just not watch the writers? Which is like another point. Like, he talks about the... I watched in the first 4 minutes of the video, he addresses the whole writer's room thing. And he goes, I am so embarrassed and so ashamed and I owe people apologies. Saying that you owe people an apology isn't the same as like apologizing.
Yeah.
That I owe them an apology. And he goes, I'm so embarrassed. And why? And he goes, why this hurts me the most? It's my face when I saw that. I was like, what the fuck? Why this hurts him the most is that when he had his first two writing gigs, he had great, great time. Like, his experience was fantastic. And the fact that he didn't pay it forward, he's so ashamed of. Sir, you had a woman bent over a table moaning and reading and telling you a story of her high school experience. That wasn't just being mean or like saying dirty jokes. That was like literally sexually harassing someone to the point where like they were like, if I don't do this, I won't have a job. And when they said no, they lost their job. Just go away, Dan Schneider.
And fucking, oh my God, can we talk about for 2 seconds how when Giovanni told the host that Dan fucking called her to try to get a quote for support. That just shows you right there that Dan's just a piece of shit. Shit, shit, shit. All the shit.
Of shit. He's such a piece of shit. And the fact that he knew she was involved, because Soledad O'Brien was like, wait. Did he not know you were involved in the thing? She goes, oh, no, he knew for like a whole year that I was involved. But I don't know if he knew the extent of what she was involved with. But then was like, oh, if you come out and say something nice about me, I'm like, dude, she was talking shit about you on that because you were a bad, bad man. And that's the thing is that bad, bad men, when they get caught, you're right. He's trying to break back into the business. And he can't do that if all of these people, and I think this is the perfect timing for this, because as he's trying to get back into it, people need to be reminded why he shouldn't be allowed around. They also talk about the fact that like Giovanni and Brian were the only two Black characters on the show, that there were only 4 Black people on set, and it was those 2 actors and then their 2 moms. That's it. There was no person of color behind the camera to have that. And we'll talk a little bit more about the whole race issue in a minute. But basically, they were like, you know, there's these 2 Black actors on the show, and they're talking about the fact that they didn't feel represented and that they were being harassed and that they were stereotyped. And he comes back with, I launched the careers of Kenan and Kel, so how can I be racist?
Do you want a cookie? Like, I don't know what the fuck you want.
Right. And the question is, why did you overlook these 2? And then he overlooked them in their answer. Like, he didn't address them.
No, he avoided it.
It's because people are racist, but money is always their favorite color. And one of the way he answered it is, I always have like a Black actor as a lead. And then I started thinking about after Kenan and Kel, were there any more Black actors that were the leads of shows until his return after the whole Amanda Bynes WB thing? And the answer is no. The only person of color that was kind of there was Victoria Justice. And they did have supporting actors who were of color.
It doesn't negate what he did to these 2.
Yeah. The bold statement of like, I've always had a lead Black actor. It's like, no, you didn't. And then the next segment of it is Brian and his mom. And I cried the first time I watched it because I was like, oh my God. I loved what she said, because if you look at if you've read Jeanette McCurdy's book, which I know you and I both have, Jeanette's mom was dependent on her getting paid and her being a star. And Brian's mom, Tracy, was dependent on her son being a healthy child. And so she fought for her child. Whereas a lot of child actors' parents fight for the money, because that's their whole, like, if you have a child that's not like, that's an actor, you're not working because you're with your kid. And they talk about the fact that like, she watching it, she realized that she lost him when he was 13 and he had no trust in her. She was resentful, or he was resentful towards her. And she said that he ran away from home and that she like their whole relationship. And I love that Sinadad asked like, oh, this wasn't like 6 months you were mad at her and you got over it. And she's like, no, it was his whole life. And they're both there. They're together. And basically it was this year after they both saw the documentary, she texted him Happy Valentine's Day. And he texted back. And since then, they've been talking and they're rebuilding it. You can tell there's still a little bit of like...
Well, yeah, it's going to take time, obviously.
Yeah, because it's been like 20-something years, yeah. Almost 20-something years to be like, okay, I have to trust you again. But I do like that they're back together. And then they talk about, they show him a clip of Raquel, who was like one of the supporting characters on the Amanda show. And it's a clip that we didn't see in the first round. And they're talking about basically Amanda... They're doing a skit and it's called The Literals. And she would say like, spit it out. And then Amanda would spit it out, but she was spitting it out on her face. And Raquel was like getting really upset about it. And the director pulled her off set and was like, look, she's the star. I'm going to ask her to not do this, but you have to keep your cool. And it's interesting because Tracy starts talking about the fact that, you know, she was saying that Black people are conditioned to just take it because that's the only option that they've been given.
And when you have a boss like fucking Dan,
right,
you know if you don't go along with everything, you're going to be cut without a freaking second thought.
If I was Raquel, I could point to Brian and be like, here's a Black actor whose mom pushed back too hard and he got kicked off because they didn't want to change their ways. And it's interesting because Tracy says, you know, they talk about how the fact that like they'd have like one Black person and one Asian person and that one Asian person has to represent every single area of the continent of Asia. Like they have to be all of the Asian cultures. And then the same thing, they have like one Hispanic and then they'll have like seven white kids.
Right. I would say which that alone is racist in itself.
Right. It's like, oh, okay, well, there was like the one person, but they can't represent everyone. And Brian talks about how that was like too much responsibility. Like that's a big yeah. responsibility to like represent the whole world.
As a kid too.
Right. Soledad O'Brien asked Tracy, like, what advice would you give a Black child actor today? And I loved it. It was like, do it. But if you have to walk away, do that. And to parents, say like, if you have to pull your kids out, pull them out. And yeah, I get how they would probably still be resentful, but like it could be worse. And then after Tracy leaves, they bring in a new face. His name is Shane Lyons. He was on the same All That as Giovanni and Brian. He was the Chris Farley character on the show. And he said he wanted to be Chris Farley. So he was really excited about that. But also, I do like the fact that he talks about his mom and dad were both chefs. And they were like, okay, we don't really need you to be an actor. Like, if you want to be an actor, be an actor. If not, but now he's a chef.
Right. It wasn't an end all be all for him. Mm-hmm.
When he got fired from Nickelodeon, All That, he was 16 and they just didn't pick up his contract. It was probably because he looked too old. That's probably what it was. And, you know, he had a backup dream, which a lot of child actors don't have backup dreams. Like, this is it. This is how I'm going to do everything. And he addresses Brian Peck in this and the fact that he does admit that he was charming. And this is kind of a concept I did think of, but I don't know if we talked about, which is that Brian was an adult on set who gave the children space to be creative in the fact that like their opinions about the show mattered to him. So like, oh, there's a sketch and they like work it out together and they improv and they do that kind of stuff, which is really treating them like adults, which makes them feel safe with you because that's really what it is that these kids feel really safe with you. He talked about that. They asked him about how he felt about Drake coming out and telling his story. And he's like, I think it was very brave because it is a big thing. Like you're telling the whole world. Essentially.
Right.
That I was a victim of sexual assault. And though we're doing much better as a society at not victim blaming, there's a lot of victim blaming that still happens. And Shane was saying that he thought it was really gut-wrenching what happened to Drake and that he finds himself to be very lucky that nothing like that happened to him. But he did say that Brian made passes at him, but like he didn't quite understand them. Like basically Shane was alone in the green room and Brian either came in or like a bunch of people had just left, leaving them alone. And I guess the conversation had been about blue balls, which I'm like, why are you having a conversation about blue balls on a children's set to begin with? And he asked, it was so like the innocence of this boy, when he's just like, you know, Brian asked him like, you know what blue balls are, right? And he goes, yeah, they're racket balls. Which I was like, oh, you angel baby. that was really inappropriate. Like, and he says, like, now he's like a 36-year-old man. He goes, I'm a 36-year-old man. There's no way that I would tell a 13-year-old, I would be talking to a 13-year-old boy about blue balls. Doesn't make sense. In what reality is that?
That's so gross.
Right. You know, it doesn't make any sense. You know, maybe if you're a doctor and the kid comes in and is like, I'm having this weird sensation when I'm like, you know, because.
Yeah, that's completely different.
To be a random dude in a green room at this child's work being like, you know what blue balls are, right? Because like, where was that going to go? Where was that going to go? Drake talked about, and the thing is that it started with these like weird, like slightly inappropriate things.
Testing the waters.
Yeah. And this was a definite test the waters. Shane says the only way this is going to change is if you change the law, because there is a loophole in the law that says as long as there is a parent or guardian present, they don't have to do background checks. I work very adjacent to California law. This would be a slam dunk bill. This will happen.
I hope so. I hope so. Like when I heard that, I was just like, that is just so fucking gross. So gross.
I mean, there's still some, I don't think the spot bill deadline has changed, but like in the state of California, this still could happen.
Yeah.
I think, yes, it's a slam dunk, but then no, it's not, because then you're mandating work and that always has ramifications. But I think people will be like, oh, you know, there was this documentary that came out and maybe we should just make it. I mean, I think if it's not a law, you should make it the like policy of your company.
I'm like, you're working with children. Of course you should run background checks on everybody.
Mm-hmm. And then they bring out Brian and Gio, and the three of them kind of have this like little mini reunion on set. And they talk about like how it's like, it doesn't matter how many years this has gone. They just like pick right back up. And I think that was so genuine. And like, really, these kids are all trauma bonded because they went through it all together. And so they're like, the only person who's going to understand what I went through is the person sitting next to me, because they lived it. And even adults on that set probably watching it didn't experience it the way the kids did. It's so sad because like there is this whole element of like, I loved these shows. They were so funny. But the man who created them is such a fucking perv. And the fact that three pedophiles worked on these sets and had access to these kids.
And who knows how many more.
Right. And then like we're talking like Brian came back and worked on The Sweet Life of Zach and Cody.
Yeah. I hope these documentary creators go towards the Disney route next.
Oh, I hope so too. And like one of the things is like Drake was, when he was asked about Amanda and he kind of like changed the subject, he talked about all the kids that have been lost. And I think of Lee Thompson Young. I don't know if you know who he is. He played a real life Jet Jackson or something like that.
Yes.
Then he went on and he had more roles. But in 2013, he killed himself. And I remember, like, I'll just be really honest and transparent. I remember when that happened, I was like, why would he kill himself? Like, he was an actor. He had, like, this luxury life. Because I didn't know. Like, but now it's, like, seeing this kind of, like, really terrible side of that. It's, like, there's something in that boy's past that, like, he just couldn't outrun. And it could have been abuse on set. It could have been so many things. I don't know. Like when I think about it, I just am like, these poor child actors who always had to seem like everything was okay. That's not emotionally healthy, because then they're just shoving everything down. And, you know, I'm glad a lot of them, like Brian talks about, like when he watched the documentary, it was on a Monday, which is not a therapy day. And so he had to like call his therapist panicked. I'm glad that they have help. But I also just really wish they had never gone through it.
For sure. For sure.
You could have done the same things. Like the one question they said, if you take all the feet jokes out and all the face shots out, do you still have a show? You so have a show. Yeah, there were funny elements of that show that weren't disgusting.
Well, right. Exactly. It just comes down to what Dan created.
Right. And so they could have still done the show. It's just that he chose, which is why I have the theory until the day I die, is that he basically curated his own version of child porn. And he did it, and Nickelodeon paid him to make it. They owe restitution to these actors. They allowed Drake's father and him to have a split because it benefited them. They allowed Brian Peck to take advantage of people because he was good at his job. Because two things can be true. He could be really good at his job and still be a terrible fucking human and still like be the trashiest. And I really hope that Brian is out there right now just like just thinking about what a terrible human being he is.
I hope karma bites him in the ass so fucking hard. That's all I'll say about Brian.
I agree.
We're done. Yay.
But I'm really glad this is over, because this is a lot. I knew what we were getting into, but then I didn't know what we were getting into, because who knew what they were going to say? And first and foremost, my heart goes out to every single child actor who's been abused, who has witnessed abuse, who has been screamed at by an adult who could literally just talk to them like a human being. I just wish peace. I just wish peace out there for this and for those surrounding it, to give yourself a little grace, because sometimes you see things and you can't say things because you don't know what it really is.
Oh, let me say one more thing. Not that they're ever going to see it, but to Dan, Jason.
Oh, get it.
And Brian, I hope you all burn in hell.
But there's already a special place.
Ooh, you know what? Oh my God. I hope that in hell they get the little Nikki version of it where Hitler gets the pineapple shoved off his ass. I hope that's what they get.
I mean that, but I was really hoping that, really hope that Dan Schneider has to watch like a historical document for the rest of his life, or this documentary for the rest of his life, just on repeat. In hell with a pineapple being shoved up his ass.
In a maid costume. Because that's what Hitler was
in. In a maid costume, yeah.
I love that movie.
I know, me too. I don't hope for a lot of bad things. I actually really normally don't hope bad things happen to people, but
them I do.
Sometimes I make an exception. You are my exception to that rule, is that I really hope you trip every time you come across an uneven sidewalk. I really hope that you fall down on your face and continuously break your nose. All of the little things in life that like brought you joy before this make you very unhappy.
I hope you guys all have the day that you deserve every single fucking day of the rest of your lives.
I just want them to trip every single day of their life and break their nose, because I just think that would be like the weirdest thing to happen to them and be so painful.
Anyway, all right.
With that, we're gonna go ahead and wrap up. We will see you guys next time. Bye guys.
Bye.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.